পঞ্জাবি হরে গোপী জন বল্লব গিরিবন ধরে জয় রাধা মাধব কুঞ্জ বিহারি গোপী জন বল্লব গিরিবন ধরে যশোরা নন্দন ব্রজ নন্দন যমুনা তীরা বন চরি জয় রাধা মাধব কুঞ্জ বিহারি গোপী জন বল্লব গিরিবন ধরে যশোরা নন্দন ব্রজ নন্দন যমুনা তীরা বন চরি জয় রাধা মাধব কুঞ্জ বিহারি গোপী জন বল্লব গিরিবন ধরে যশোর নন্দন ব্রজ নন্দন যমুনা তীরা বন চরে জয় প্রভু পদা জয় প্রভু পদা জয় প্রভু পদা জয় প্রভু পদা জয় জয় ভূপাল 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 জয় নিত্যালীল শ্রীভক্তিবেদান্ত স্বামী শ্রী দ্রৌপদী জয় রঞ্জকো শ্রীকৃষ্ণ চৈতন্য প্রভু নিত্যানন্দ শ্রী শ্রী রাধা শ্যাম সুন্দর গোপ গোপীনাথ শ্যামকুন্দ রাধকুন্দ গিরি গোবরণ কি জয় গ্রন্থরাজ শ্রীমদ ভগবতাম কি জয় গৌর ভীমনন্দী অগ্লোরি শ্রী অগ্লোরি শ্রী অগ্লোরি শ্রী অগ্লোরি শ্রী 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 গুরু গৌরঙ্গ ওম নমো ভগবতে বাসুদেবায় ওম নমো ভগবতে বাসুদেবায় ওম নমো ভগবতে বাসুদেবায় রিডিং টুডে ফ্রম শ্রীমদ ভাগবতম ফার্স্ট ক্যান্টো 18th চ্যাপ্টার টেক্সট নাম্বার 22 ুক্ত সহশীর ব্যাপোহাদিহে দেশু সঙ্গদূর ব্রজন্তি তৎপারমহংসমত্যম যস্মিন অহিংসোপাশমাস্বদাম যত্র অনুরক্ত সহ শৈব জীর Yapo Yadi Hade Shusangamudam. Vrajanti Tat Paramahamsyam Atmam. Yasmin Ahimso Pashama Svadharma. Yatranurakta Sahasyai Vidira. Vyapo Hati Hadeshu Sangam Udham. Rajanti Tat Paramahamsyam Atyam. Asmin Ahimso Pashama Svadharma. Ranurakta Sahasai Vadira. Yapo Hadi Hadi Shusangamudvam. Yatra unto whom anupurakta firmly attached sahasya all of a sudden eva certainly dira self-control yopaha leaving aside deha gross body and subtle mind adishu relating to Sangam, attachment. Udham, taken to. Rajanti, go away. Tat, that. Paramahamsyam, the highest stage of perfection. Atyam, and beyond that. Yasmin, in which. Ahimsa, nonviolence. Upashama and renunciation. Svadharma, consequential occupation. Translation. Self-controlled persons who are attached to the Supreme Lord, Sri Krishna, can all of a sudden give up the world of material attachment, including the gross body and subtle mind, and go away to attain the highest perfection of the renounced order of life, by which non-violence and renunciation are consequential. Only the self-control can gradually be attached to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Self-control means not indulging in sense enjoyment more than is necessary. And those who are not self-controlled are given over to sense enjoyment. Dry philosophical speculation is a subtle sense enjoyment of the mind. Sense enjoyment leads one to the path of darkness. Those who are self-controlled can make progress on the path of liberation from the conditioned life of material existence. The Vedas, therefore, enjoin that one should not go to the path of darkness, but one should make a progressive march toward the path of light. Liberation. Self-control is actually achieved not by artificially stopping the senses from material enjoyment, but by becoming factually attached to the Supreme Lord by engaging one's unalloyed senses in the transcendental service of the Lord. The senses cannot be forcibly curbed, but they can be given proper engagement. Purified senses, therefore, are always engaged in the transcendental service of the Lord. This perfectional stage of sense enjoyment is called bhakti yoga. So those who are attached to the means of bhakti yoga are firmly self-controlled and can all of a sudden give up their homely or bodily attachment for the service of the Lord. This is called the Paramahamsa stage. Hamsas are swans, accept only milk out of a mixture of milk and water. Similarly, those who accept the service of the Lord instead of Maya service are called the Paramahamsas. They are naturally qualified with all good attributes, such as pridelessness, freedom from vanity, nonviolence, tolerance, simplicity, respectability, worship, devotion, and sincerity. All of these godly qualities exist in the devotee of the Lord spontaneously. Such Paramahamsas who are completely given to the service of the Lord are very rare. They are very rare even amongst the liberated souls. Real nonviolence means freedom from envy. In this world, everyone is envious of his fellow being, but a perfect Paramahamsa, being completely given up to the service of the Lord, is perfectly non-envious. He loves every living being in relation with the Supreme Lord. Real renunciation means perfect dependence on the Lord. Every living being is dependent on someone else because he is so made. Actually, everyone is dependent on the mercy of the Supreme Lord, but when one forgets his relationship with the Lord, he becomes dependent on the conditions of material nature. Renunciation means renouncing one's dependence on the conditions of material nature and thus becoming completely dependent on the mercy of the Lord. Real independence means complete faith in the mercy of the Lord without dependence on the conditions of matter. This Paramahamsa stage is the highest perfectional stage in Bhakti Yoga, the process of devotional service to the Lord. Om Dhyanatimarandasya Jananjana Shivakaya Chaksu Unmalitam Natasmai Sri Guru Vyamaha Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Vrishtaya Bhutale Shumati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Phenomena Namaste, Sarasvati Devi, Gauravani Pacharani, Nirvisesha Sunyavari Paspitari Pitarani, Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pandum Lam Jayate Girinja, Vipakamaham Pandu Shri Girin Vipadana, Jayasi Krishna Chaitanya Prabhunitananda Sri Vedigrava Shivasti Gauravati Vinda, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Bunch of opportunities to have people in the way, job, teacher, and father, and your worship, and your own heart. My only constant companion, my only friend, my guru, my wealth, that which has delivered me, my great fortune, and the source of my good luck, the form through which I taste pleasure, my obeisance is unto you, O Srimad Bhagavatam. So, following yesterday's footsteps, no, I'm not Vedavati. Vedavati very nicely pointed out, speaking yesterday, she wasn't me, but I don't know who could possibly be disappointed hearing from such an exemplary daughter of Srila Prabhupada. It's actually the great benefit of this community is that we have so many devotees of such variegated and long-standing service to Srila Prabhupada that we can hear from. And to be fortunate enough to be amongst such devotees is a great blessing for all of us. In the class she spoke on yesterday, it was noted in the verse that who can be worthy of the name of the Supreme Personality of Godhead? I might add to that, who can be worthy of chanting the name of the Supreme Personality of Godhead as well? And the answer to that would be certainly not us, or at least certainly not me. But by Prabhupada's mercy alone, he's come to the most unlikely of places the most unlikely of times and bringing the most glorious sound vibrations to the most unlikely of candidates. This is the unfathomable mercy of Srila Prabhupada. To this point, it was noted in the verse yesterday that even the demigods, who are sometimes misunderstood by those persons of less intelligence as being independent, they desire the foot water from the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Lord Brahma and Shiva were mentioned in the purport particularly, but the foot wash is always from seniors. This is the, again, is a example showing the superiority of Vishnu over the demigods. Again, those persons, as mentioned by Mahaprabhu and Narottam Das Thakur, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, those persons who mistakenly worship the demigods as supreme in their own right, do not clearly understand their position, and such demigods are very quick to point out their subservient position to Vishnu, to Krishna. Of course, from time to time, for the sake of the Lord's divine lila, they may overstep those boundaries, such as the Brahma Vimohan lila or the Govardhan lila, in which the two prominent demigods, Brahma and Indra, challenged Krishna, either by taking away his associates or trying to kill all of his associates. But generally speaking, they always understand their subservient position. And this example in yesterday's verse of taking the foot water, the foot bath from the Lord is like that. This is done only with one's seniors. One never takes the water from the junior, from an unqualified person. Well, that is unless you're Kalidas. Kalidas is very famous in the pastimes of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. He's a devotee that his business was to offer obeisances to every Vaishnava in Bengal, that happened to be where he resided, and to take the remnants of their food. No consideration on caste or background. You were Vaishnava, you were engaged in serving the Lord, chanting the holy name. Okay, I'll take your remnants. So he would go to these devotees' homes, any devotee's home, and he would bring gifts when he came of the finest foodstuffs, very high quality. And then after they partook of these foodstuffs, he would then ask for their remnants. And if anyone was unwilling to give their remnants, to which I would pose the opposite question, was there someone that actually willingly gave their remnants? Prabhu, could I have the remnants off your plate? Yeah, sure, here, go ahead and take them. But at any rate, if anyone was unwilling to give, then he would hide and take such remnants without their knowledge. He would wait for them to finish their prasadam and then throw away the leaf plates. Outside of every home, there would be one spot where leaf plates and clay cups were thrown. And then he would take those leaf plates and put them clean. And in this way, he made it his business to get the mercy of all the Vaishnavas. He didn't consider this one's senior, this one's junior. He just took. One day, he went to the house. Prabhupada was telling the story on a morning lecture in Mayapur. One day he went to the house of Jarut Thakur and he offered his obeisances and sat with Jarut Thakur and his wife. And he had brought them some gifts of some very, very, very sweet, just perfectly ripe mangoes. And Jarut Thakur recognized Kalidas to be a guest of the highest brahminical order, the great Vaishnava. So he showed him proper respect and he said to him, "My dear sir, I am of a very low caste. You please let me know what I can do to serve you. You just say the word, and I will arrange for some Brahmin to be brought and cook foodstuffs for you. And then if you take that foodstuffs here in our home, then I'll be greatly benefited. Kalidas, on the other hand, he recognized Kunjara Thakur's humility as being the appropriate crest jewel of a Vaishnava. The crest jewel means the finest quality. You sometimes look at the deity and there'll be some particular, oh, that's just so amazing to you. Like today, it's just an abundance of peacocks. And then there's this peacock feather on the end of Krishna's flute. So something that immediately draws you to that person. So Kalidas recognized the crest jewel of humility. And you know, he said, no. He said, I'm extremely fallen. And it is only a result of my good fortune of meeting you that I have any benefit in my life. If you'll only be so kind as to allow me to take the dust of your feet and place it on my head. And Jara Thakur was not very comfortable with this. Chaitanya Lila mentions that he was very embarrassed and he felt very uneasy. So Kalidas, he recited some appropriate verses glorifying the devotees of the Lord. Name bhaktash chaturvedhi mat bhakta sva pachapriya tasmai deham tato graham sacha pujo yata yaham. A learned scholar in the four Vedas is not very dear to me if he is not my devotee. Whereas someone born into the family of dog eaters who is devoted to me, he is very dear to me. All respect should be given to such a person, and one should accept his gifts, for such devotees are as worshipable as I am. This is, of course, quoted by this three verses I've got it. And several other verses of this nature, Kalidas quoted. So, Jara Thakur, of course, accepted the truth of the scriptural statements, but in great humility pointed out, but these don't apply to me. This is the interesting thing about a humble devotee. They can understand and accept the verdict of Shastra, but when it comes to glorifying a devotee, they say, but this doesn't apply to me. We see this in all of our great acharyas. They do not consider themselves great devotees. Excuse me. They consider themselves to be very unfortunate and low caste. So, at any rate, he didn't accept this as being applicable to his situation. Yes, Shastra is correct. The devotees, they are highly worshipable because of their good quality, but this is not. So, Kalidas could see this wasn't going to go anywhere, so he offered respectful obeisances, and he left. And Jara Thakur politely walked with him. You know, you don't just leave and go, okay, goodbye. Expecting you follow the guest to the door, to the outside of the property, to the end of the driveway, whatever. And so they walked together for a short distance before Jara Thakur turned to walk back home to his house. As he turned to walk back home to his house, Kalidas reached down into the dirt and took the dust from his footprints and smeared that all over his body. Now, he wasn't satisfied. He still desired to get the remnants from the plate of Jara Thakur. So he quietly went back and hid near the house. Jara Thakur entered his home. He and his wife placed the mangoes that were given in a banana bark bowl, and they offered them to the household children. And then the wife and he took the prasad. And they ate the mangoes, and you know, like, the nice thing about mangoes, once you get the skin off and you eat all the fleshy part, then there's the seed. And the seed's always got some good mango fruit on it. So you kind of suck on that seed, you know, you take your teeth and kind of grate off the one side. We've all done this. We've all had a mango seed. That's one of the best parts of the mango, you know. You chew all the little fruit parts that are off of it like that and put it in your mouth and suck on it. It's not a very clean thing, but it gets a little drippy and wet. But at any rate, so they suck the seeds like this and then even lick the inside of the skins to get all the, this must have been a really good mango, is all I can say, to get all the fruit off of it. And then they took those mango skins and bits and threw them with the banana plates into the appropriate place, went back into the house. And I'm sure you can all guess where the story's going from here. Kalidas came out of his home and he picked up those mango seeds, the ones that they had sucked on very enthusiastically, and those skins, and he took the remnants of the Vaishnavas in that way. And when he took those remnants, he was completely overwhelmed in ecstasy. So this was Kalidas's business, to go to all the Vaishnavas and take the service without considering who is higher and who is lower, who is junior, who is senior. Yesterday's verse, we saw that the demigods are doing to the senior, the Vishnu, but Kalidas would be that exception. At any rate, today's verse goes in a little bit of a different vein about the glories of a devotee, continuing speaking about the glories of the devotee, but in a different direction. And the first line of this verse is extremely significant. Self-controlled persons who are attached to the Supreme Lord, Sri Krishna, can all of a sudden give up the world of material attachment. It's a very bold statement. Prabhupada would often state this as a fact, many different times on many different lectures or morning walks or room conversations. Prabhupada would be asked, how long does it take to become Krishna conscious? And Prabhupada would say, it can be done in a second. It can be done in a second. Which is true. It can be done in a second. But there's two caveats given by Sukha Goswami in this regard. One, if we're self-controlled. And two, if we are attached to Krishna. So, if we're self-controlled and if we're attached to Krishna, we can be Krishna conscious in a second. All of a sudden is the word used here. What's this? Let's look at that word, all of a sudden.
Samasaiva.
What's that?
Samasaiva.
There we go. Yeah. Our Sanskrit scholar. All of a sudden we can become Krishna conscious if we're self-controlled and attached to Krishna. But then Prabhupada softens, if you will, the blow a bit for us in his purport. He says, only the self-controlled can gradually be attached to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Self-controlled means not indulging in sense enjoyment more than is necessary. More than is necessary. It has to be done. Senses have to be satisfied. This is technically sense enjoyment. But it has to be done properly. So it's according to what is necessary, but not more than that. So it doesn't require that we have to retire to the Himalaya Mountains. It doesn't require that we have to live in a cave. There was a recent thing somewhere on the internet that I saw. Some soldiers in the Himalaya Mountains had come across one yogi who was literally just living there in the snow. Well, I mean, literally, the guy was just sitting there in the snow. You know, so that's not required. Eating something every third day, that's not required. Chanting 196 rounds a day, that's not required. We don't even need to be able to dance for 72 hours nonstop or to eat 96 pounds of rice in one sitting. These are the activities of the associates of Mahaprabhu. These types of austerities are performed by yogis, by tyagis, by Mahaprabhu's followers. We don't have to do any of those things. But we do require to follow the basic principles of devotional life. This is mandatory. On the other side of the coin, so to speak, there's the idea of overindulgence. Eating with no restriction. Going to places that really have no connection to our needs or to Krishna consciousness. Or any of the other assortment of Maya's varieties of enticements that are there. This is the thing, is that Maya has so many enticements to lead us away from the path of Krishna consciousness, to even indulge in, maybe not even overly indulge, but just indulge at all, that we don't necessarily have to. And these are the things that keep us from this platform of if we're self-controlled and if we're attached to Krishna. And we have some attachment to Krishna that's there. You know, the principle of following devotional life for some period of time requires attachment to Krishna. That's understood. But how strong is that attachment when Maya presents her allurements? This is what we have to work against, and this is why Sarasanga is so necessary, so important. Because by the association of devotees, we keep ourselves reminded. I can't help but think of my own situation where I work. You know, I'm surrounded all day by people that are in no way following any kind of devotional principles. And so many conversations, so many enticements. It's no secret to anybody how much I love donuts. And there's always somebody bringing donuts in the break room for all the employees to eat. And I have to refrain from those because they're not devotee donuts. They have all kinds of bad ingredients in them, you know. So all these different enticements. Well, what's the benefit? So many devotees come in there all day. I get the association of so many nice devotees all day long. There's never a day that goes that some devotee doesn't come in. And there's two or three of them that come in, and they come in and say, okay, what's the news for the day? They force me to say something about Krishna. So in this way, Sarasanga, the devotees association protects us. The devotees association insulates us against all of Maya's attractions, all of her allurements, reminds us of what our standards are, of what our principles are, of what our focus is. Because without that reminder, we can easily, you know, just like an archer, they have to be very, very focused on the very center of the target. There's a wonderful story when the Swayambhara was going on, and the Pandavas came forward. Arjuna stepped forward, and it wasn't just shoot an arrow to a target. It was shoot an arrow to a target while looking in a reflective pond of water. And it wasn't just shoot an arrow at a target while looking in a reflective pond of water. It was shoot an arrow at a target while looking in a reflective pond of water to something that was on the ceiling behind the wheel of a chariot. And it wasn't just shoot an arrow at a target while looking in a reflective pond of water at something on the ceiling that was behind the wheel of the chariot. You had to hit it at a certain spot, namely the eye of that fish that was there, while the wheel was moving. You could be a pretty good archer. You have to have intense focus. Intense focus. This is the type of focus that is required of us as we go through our daily activities in Krishna consciousness in this jailhouse of the material world. So many different types of allurements. Now, Prabhupada alludes very directly here to another type of allurement, another type of maya. He says, dry philosophical speculation is a subtle sense enjoyment. Dry philosophical speculation. This isn't only found in our own line. There are many, many examples of this. They're abundantly seen throughout the scriptures, so many different stories, and particularly in the time of Mahaprabhu and the different Chaitanya Leelas, but in other lines as well. I think we've all had the experience of meeting someone, shall we say, a very enthusiastic Christian while we're out on Sankirtan who wants to spend a great deal of our time debating with us, are trying to bring us to their point of view or their understanding, and really wasting our valuable time. Because there's no conclusion. There's no anybody changing camps. Or we might even be guilty of such a thing ourselves, you know, trying to persuade someone that has no interest in being persuaded, simply to hear ourselves speak and to, you know, go on and on about how knowledgeable or whatever. these are efforts at just speaking for the purpose of being heard, and it's a type of sense enjoyment. What to speak of Maya bodies directly with their, as Prabhupada uses the word, dry philosophical speculations on this thing, that thing, and the other. Prabhupada explains that the definition of a genuine muni is that he has to come up with a different point of view than all the other munis. So, creating some new idea. You know, this is, or wasting our time and arguing with someone that is not going to be argued. As Prabhupada says here, it's just another type of sense gratification. Something else to bewilder us and take us down the path, you know, where we're headed. Now, we're also instructed in this purport, those who are self-controlled can make progress on the path of liberation from the conditioned life of material existence. So this is a very good direction, a very good direction for us. We can make progress on the path of liberation as long as we're self-controlled. But how do we control our senses? That's the reasonable question. When someone gives a statement that has an instruction in it, if we're not clear on that, the practical question is, so how do I execute that? So then some instruction has to be there. Because the senses, they're like wild horses, according to the Bhagavad Gita. They burn like a fire that has no end to it. So with these two understandings of what our senses are like, how do we complete the task? If I'm supposed to control my senses and that will give me progress on the path of liberation from conditioned life, how do I do it? Well, the answer is also given by Prabhupada here. I mean, Prabhupada gives us all the answers. It's really not an amazing thing that, oh, Prabhupada told us something, well, how do we do it? No, Prabhupada also gave us the answer how to do it. And he says right here, self-control is actually achieved not by artificially stopping the senses from material enjoyment, but by becoming factually attached to the Supreme Lord by engaging one's unalloyed senses in the transcendental service of the Lord. The senses cannot be forcibly curbed, but they can be given proper engagement. Purified senses, therefore, are always engaged in the transcendental service of the Lord. This perfectional stage of sense enjoyment is called bhakti yoga. Purified senses. Unalloyed senses, this means they have no other focus, no other input. I can't remember it very clearly, that famous story when Prabhupada came to the Boston Harbor, unalloyed steel, the big company, and he liked that point that, you know, everything should be unalloyed. Yeah. This means pure steel. This means no other alloys or ingredients here. So unalloyed senses engage in transcendental service means that the senses are all focused simply in the transcendental service of the Lord. And the senses can be engaged very nicely that way if they work together for the service of the Lord. There's that wonderful story Prabhupada tells that one time the senses, they had a meeting. And so they decided to discuss the fact that the legs, the feet, the hands, ears were all working so hard. And that rascal stomach is just sitting there and reaping all the benefits. So we're going to go on strike. We refuse to serve the stomach any longer. And the stomach said, all right, your choice. I can't do the work. I can't go out and, you know, there's nothing I can do. So, all right, that's what you decide. Everybody take a vote, all in favor? Aye. Okay, so all the senses went on strike. They quit doing anything to serve the stomach. But as Prabhupada tells the story, what happened is that the stomach received no nourishment, wasn't able to distribute any nourishment, and the body became weak. And the body became challenged and unhealthy. So another meeting was called. All the senses got together. All right, I guess we have to surrender. We'll serve the stomach. So they served the stomach, and then the stomach distributed all the nourishment, the necessities, and everything went on nicely because they all work together. So we have to do like that. We have to engage all of our senses. It's not that, you know, we can engage, you know, one sense in devotional service and the others in material consciousness, or most of the senses in one only material. However, we have to be unalloyed in our service of the senses, in our engagement of the senses in the service of the Lord. This will give us the proper benefit. Taking whatever the senses would normally do and bringing that around, as Rupa Goswami used the term, dovetailing it into Krishna consciousness. Very practical example for me. I grew up hiking and mountain climbing and stuff like that. I was in the Boy Scouts. My father was a troop leader. We would, at least twice a month, we'd go out on hikes and camping and all, and I really liked that. You know, it's just so appealing to me. So I became aware many, many years ago of a thing called the Appalachian Trail. Some of you may know about this. It's a famous trail for hiking in America that runs from somewhere in Georgia all the way up to Vermont, or Maine, rather, Maine. And it is not something you do overnight by any means. And, you know, some people would do it all in one stretch. It's like a six-month thing. You take what you can carry, and you know, you have different places you can stop along the way. You know, it's just that I was always just so enticed by this idea. You know, being out in the woods in nature on your own, walking every day, observing everything. You know, this was just such a wonderful thing. And I was planning how I would do it and at what point in my life I would do it. Maybe my son would do it with me and all of this, you know, planning it out very carefully. I discovered after I did Dandapat Parakram of Govardhan Hill, that desire dissipated. Oh, you want to do an austerity connected with mountains? Why should you hike 3,000 miles? Just do Dandapats for 14 months. Austerity connected to Krishna. Done. Desire for other types of practices, gone. So this is a practical example in my life, and we've all got a practical example in each of our lives, how we can dovetail the senses in engaging our services for Krishna. And so when we do that, what is the result of such detachment from Maya and attachment to Krishna with the senses? Again, in the portrait here, one naturally becomes qualified with all the good attributes, such as pridelessness, freedom from vanity, non-violence, tolerance, simplicity, respectability, worship, devotion, and sincerity. All these godly qualities exist in the devotee of the Lord spontaneously. Wonderful list of qualities. Very good list of qualities to possess. When I'm at Woodstock preaching, when, of course, it's been a couple of years since that happened, but at any rate, for a number of years in a row ago, there would always be a conversation that would come up about the regulative principles and about the benefit that one gains from following the regulative principles. One develops self-control, one develops cleanliness, one develops truthfulness, one develops mercy, compassion. So I would point out that these four qualities, even aside from all religious and spiritual considerations, are good qualities to find in a person. So, you know, we'd want to associate with someone that has these qualities, self-control, cleanliness, truthfulness, and mercy towards others. So why wouldn't we want to do something that enhances those? So in the same way, the qualities listed here in this purport, they are qualities that would greatly benefit anyone, especially in our modern world of me first. Everything in this world is about my satisfaction, me first. There's a punk band called Me First and the Gimme Gimmes. So interestingly enough, the name for this band, it comes from a children's book also called Me First and the Gimme Gimmes. And the children's book is about this selfish and angry young boy whose name is Me First. And he belongs to a group called the Gimme Gimmies. And through the course of this children's book, he learns how to be a kind and caring person by, as you would guess it, giving up Me First and the Gimme Gimmies. So it's interesting because even in the secular world, the important quality of not putting yourself at the front of everything is seen as a quality for a well-mannered and a good-natured person. It's respected as, you know, someone doesn't want to put themselves first, doesn't always want everything for themselves, that they're very much respected in that way. So let's look over this list again here. Pridelessness, freedom from vanity, nonviolence, tolerance, simplicity, respectability, worship, devotion, and sincerity. Nine qualities. I'm sure we could go over this list in detail and find people that we know that represent these qualities or examples of these qualities in the Srimad Bhagavatam and the lives of different personalities. Very, very nice qualities here. So we're going to close today with, I guess you might call it a homework assignment that you can complete throughout the coming week or the coming months or the coming year, especially as this is the time of year at which we all make New Year's resolutions. According to one of our esteemed members of this community, an article on Dundabots, these don't usually work, but we can work on this list of qualities and keep this list near and dear to our hearts and see what we can do to develop these qualities in our own outlook and our own exchanges with others and in our own devotional progress. That's a nice meditation, I think, at least as we look at moving forward chronologically in the year and hopefully spiritually in our advancement. So we'll finish there today. If anybody has any comments, questions, corrections, probably more the latter than the former. Nobody's got anything. All right. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaura Vimalananda.